Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. I'm your woke brother extraordinaire number one, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozni Lambre, if you want to get governmental on me. Today, we're hosting a very special episode. Obviously, we got my paisan, Michael Jamal Abdul Shabazz Brooks, on the line, right, as always. But I'm very proud to welcome, on his inaugural voyage on the Woke Bros, my brother, Mariano Bivens, man.
Yes, yes.
The hairline guy.
What's up, man?
Tip set connoisseur. This guy is a legend.
Wait, all right. I know Mariano from listening to the pod, but I wouldn't say that I'm a dip set connoisseur. I would say I'm a dip set stan. So I'm happy to hear that.
Oh yeah. You know what? You the home, you the bro. You leveled up all the way to the bro status right there. Man. I love that.
You know how? Yeah. Look, I just have to say, when YouTube started doing the fucking algorithm where you couldn't play interstitial instrumentals anymore,
oh man,
DMBS ran on Dipset instrumentals. That's probably the only content in the world where it's like, all right, we're going to come back and talk about why we need to nationalize the credit card industry with
and the beat too, I Really Mean It is really on in the background. On today's show, we're going to get into Meghan McCain going on Seth Meyers' show on Late Night and absolutely embarrassing herself. Yeah, the opposite of Dipset, the opposite of woke.
Yeah.
You know, little trust fund baby embarrassing herself in front of the nation on Seth Meyers' great show.
And then her cuck husband having a tantrum.
Bro,
I have a lot of thoughts about this. All right.
Okay.
Yep.
Also, just a quick recap of episode 4. Of Game of Thrones, you know, it's the talk of the town. It's the talk of the internet. It's the talk of real life. It's one of the few things that you cannot escape, right? No matter what your social group may be, people are talking about Game of Thrones, whether you're at work, whether you're at school, whether you're at home, whether you're with your family, whatever the case may be, you're at Trader Joe's. It doesn't matter. People are talking to Thrones. So.
Especially if you're at Trader Joe's.
And so,
everybody's at Trader Joe's, though.
That's a big fact.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, this show is very drug friendly.
Yeah.
We are part of the legalize it movement, man, or at the very least decriminalize it. Mm-hmm. Denver, Colorado is putting the decriminalization of magic mushrooms up to a vote. The citizens of that city are actually going to get an up or down vote of whether they should decriminalize magic mushrooms in the city of Denver, Colorado. We're going to get into that. And Schoolboy Q.
Rob, real quick. Rob, I know that you quote unquote underproduced this show, but you know, I think we're going to need some sound effects maybe in the drug section. A little editorial guidance, all right?
Absolutely. And of course, Schoolboy Q of Black Hippie fame, of TDE, Los Angeles, California, Hoover Crip. World famous. He just dropped an album last week. It's his third studio album. It's called Crash Talk. Man, I think me and Mari are both pretty huge Schoolboy fans. Mike Absolutely. As well. And we're gonna get into some of the themes of that album. But first, Meghan McCain, she's just an abomination. She just really is. Scum of the earth. I hate to say that about a woman, right? Like about a young woman out in the world trying to do a thing. But my Lord, she goes on the Sunday shows, which at this point in life, if you're actually watching the Sunday shows for news, turn woke bros off. Don't just unsubscribe us, man, if that's what you're doing. Because it's like, it's literally where all the has-beens, all of the worst people in D.C., like, if you want to dig up Ali North and find out what he has to say about geopolitics, even though he's a war criminal, you can find him on the Sunday shows, right? They'll let any Republican hack from yesteryear come on, because as long as you got the sheen of being a former Republican operative, of once, you know, washing Ronald Reagan's drawers, you can get on the Sunday shows. Like, that's right. Basically the prerequisite for the Sunday shows. But, you know, she goes on the Sunday shows and she disparages Ilhan Omar, representative from Minnesota, you know, with some pretty dangerous rhetoric, right? And you know what, man? I want to give a shout out to Seth Meyers because along with Jimmy Kimmel, obviously Colbert has a background in politics because he was doing The Daily Show and then the Colbert Report. So he's, you know, inherently political as a late night host. obviously we all pillory Jimmy Fallon and talk crazy about him because of his overt apoliticism, which just grinds my gears, probably more so than even a guy that just comes out and spits right-wing rhetoric, right? Because we actually know where these people stand. Jimmy Fallon has decided to be on the sidelines, and I think his show has suffered from that, not just qualitatively, but just from the sheer viewers. But Seth Meyers has been somebody from day one who has been overtly political, right? Like, if he sees something that he believes is wrong, he's going to stand up and say something about it. So I commend him for, you know, taking that tact with everybody on a myriad of issues on his platform. So salute to that brother for that. But, you know, she went on the show, and he took it to task for it. Rob, do you have the clip ready?
Yeah, the full thing is like 11 minutes or something.
Yeah, they got a 3-minute joint where he's basically like, bitch!
In the nicest way possible.
Right, exactly. That's the
like, thing. It's one of those things where, like, if you're really good at, like, reading between the lines and kind of body language, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's when you watch it, you're like, boy, she doesn't even know. Like, he's saying so much.
He's flaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to ask about Ilhan Omar, congresswoman from Minnesota. You know, she was in a situation, you were very vocal about some of her tweets. People were upset, thought it was anti-Semitic language. She has since unequivocally apologized for them. And then after that, there was this tragic synagogue shooting in California, and you once again sort of, on a Sunday show, a Sunday news show, brought up her tweets again in the context of that shooting.
On George Stephanopoulos.
And I just wonder, because I do think it's fairly dangerous, and you brought it up after Congresswoman Omar had also had some death threats against her. Do you think, you know, she's obviously now stated she needs to be more careful with her language. Don't you think other people who talk about her need to be a little bit more thoughtful as well? Or do you stand by those comments of tying her to this, her rhetoric to the synagogue shooting?
I don't think I tied her to it in particular. I think that I'm calling out what I see as anti-Semitic language, and when you're talking about
called it out after she'd apologized for it. I do want to establish the timeline.
I think that Democrats are hedging on this, and I think it's very dangerous. And I think Chuck Schumer and I are in alignment about Israel's stance in geopolitical politics. I think it's of the utmost importance. And I think she is bringing her party to the extremism on this. And I think we have to look to Europe and what's happening over there, and that they're, you know, in the British politics, anti-Semitism is very common. And I see it happening over there, and I worry about it happening over here. I stand by every single thing I said, and if that makes me unpopular in this room or in front of you, so be it.
Well, I don't. That's a weird thing that you take the position of trying to be unpopular. Here I am trying to, you know, find the common ground on this, because I do think
Were you bothered by her language about 9/11?
I thought it was taken out of context, and I think if you watch that whole
speech, give President Trump the same leverage if he had said the same thing?
Well, I would say that Donald Trump is certainly in no position to criticize her language on 9/11 based on the things that he said about 9/11, right?
But would you give... I just think you have to give people the same credence, and I think...
Well, I would let me make the clarification between Donald Trump and Ilhan Omar is one of them has apologized and said they're going to try to do better, and they're going to be educated by people who know about this. That's what she said, and I think she... You know, it's an interesting thing when we have two Muslim women for the first time, they do have a different perspective on things. And I think when we talk about the idea of, like, let's all try to meet in the middle on things, we have to listen to other people's perspective. And
I agree. I work on The View with Joy Behar every day. I listen to other perspectives all day.
Is there a way for people to talk about differences in Israeli policy without getting framed as anti-Semitic language?
Yeah, I just think you can't talk about Jews hypnotizing the world, talking about all about the Benjamins.
You do keep bringing up the two tweets that she's apologized for, and I think that's a little unfair to her, especially because we've established...
Are you a publicist?
What?
Are you her press person?
No, I'm just someone who cares about the fact that there's someone out there who is in a minority who has had death threats against her, and I think that we should all use the same language that you're asking her to be careful about her language, and I would ask everybody else to be careful about theirs.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm not sure what would make you happy coming out of my mouth right now. I'm genuinely curious.
I'm perfectly happy with everything that's coming out of my mouth. And I
Mara, you want to jump on that for a minute, man? I'm going to unload on this. So
it's going to go in.
The first thing, there's a couple things. There's two or three things I took away from this right away. Right. The first thing is whenever you're talking to somebody and you kind of call them out on something or take them to task, if the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, I don't think I, you got to know, like, you're dealing with somebody who's not even, they're not even really listening to you. Right. They're just waiting to talk. She's like, well, I don't think I, it's not up to you. I'm telling you what this is. I'm telling you how I feel about this. You don't get to decide what, you know what I mean? Like, whether you was right or wrong on this thing. Like, it's not, that's just basic. That's just common sense. The second thing is, I think she knew exactly where she was because she works on TV and because she's one of, you know, name drop, you know, oh yeah, I work on The View. Oh yeah, this, that, you know, this, that, the third. Like, she knows where she is. So she knows that this is going to go viral to a certain extent. That clip where she says, you know, if I look like this in front of you, so be it. And then she gets the applause. It's like, you can edit that clip and just put that out to whoever you want. And it, you know, it's just going to go, it's going to do whatever you need it to do. You can shape the narrative however you want. And then the third thing is, like, she knew exactly what she was doing. And that's why I commend Seth Meyers on, you know, telling her, let's establish the timeline. You said this, you know, after she apologized.
Right.
You know, let's not act like you,
right,
you got up here and you bought out something that nobody knew. You know, you dug in the depths and just found this hidden gem. Like, no, you knew what you were doing. You put out this dangerous, you know what I mean? Like, this dangerous kind of talk. Like, you know what you're doing, but you're doing the same thing you're accusing other people of doing. You're saying you need to be careful. People need to be careful. But look what you just did. Like, you know, you bringing up this shit after the fact. She's already apologized. She already said she, you know, like you said, she want to move forward. She want to be better. And then you start, you know, if anybody watched the whole thing, you start off by talking about how, you know, Trump should be a family man instead of worrying about your family on the weekends and all this other type of shit. But as soon as it's convenient for you to bring up Trump, you bring him up. Well, would you do this if it was Trump? And it's like, yo, why are you even bringing his name up? Like, you just said, why is he bringing your family name up? But as soon as
it's
your argument, like,
come mind on. You, Mari, this is the guy who said her dad wasn't a hero because his plane got shot down.
Bro, that's my condition. It was one of
She spent like the first half of the interview talking about how Trump needs to stop worrying. You know, she spent the first half of the interview talking about how, you know, what she does on the weekend with her family and how you need to spend time with family because you can't take them for granted. And then she said she wished Trump would do the same thing. But as soon as Seth took her to task a little bit, she pulled the, you know, break the glass in case of I'm wrong emergency card. Like, oh,
you know. But what about if Trump said something racist or anti-Semitic, which he's already, like, he said anti-Semitic things already.
Yeah, I don't,
right?
I don't,
like, that's the funny thing. Like, Donald Trump was like, yeah, I like Jewish guys to handle my money. He said that. Like, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Let me just say this. First of all, what Donald Trump said about John McCain was hilarious, and I have no problem with it. But besides that, like, none. I have no problem with it. Like, the only positive thing that Donald Trump has ever contributed in life is occasionally exposing other Republicans for being who they are.
Right.
Literally, right? And but, like, what I just find, I mean, first of all, and you know that I am not the person, like, I hate people who are like, first of all, if it comes to grammar and spelling and shit like that, if you ever see my Twitter feed, I have no legs to stand on. I misspell. I miss words all the time more than I should. And I'm not a fucking scold. And I hate people that are like that. But I have to say, like, in a segment where you're watching a person who has literally had her entire life handed to her, and I always hesitate when I do this because I feel like it comes off as an insult but I have no, like, I have nothing but respect for people doing every type of job, period. Right. And my perspective is that everybody should basically, no matter what they are, should be able, working wise, should have a lot of the money to live a good life and power over their lives, period. Right. But the way we structure our society now, if you get to go to Columbia University and make your career in television, most likely you are either going to be very financially privileged or, in the case of her, a case of pure nepotism. And you look at her like, she wouldn't be, like, if she was not John McCain's daughter and she was a middle manager at Applebee's, She wouldn't be the middle manager at Applebee's that everybody else would be like, you know what? She should be on The View. They'd be like, God, Megan is a fucking idiot. Megan is so fucking annoying. And I say all of that to say she used two words just totally incorrectly in that clip, leverage and I think the other one was credence. just wrong use of words. And then she said geopolitical politics. Now, two other quick things. Contrast that with Ilhan Omar, where if you wanted to put advertisements for the United States in China, in the Middle East, in Africa, in Europe, wherever, to say, you know what, whatever you think of us and Donald Trump and all of the problems that we cause in the world and all of our
guns, look at this woman.
This woman gets to be a refugee, immigrate here, and now is in Congress. Fuck, look at what you can do here. She's right. The exact opposite of Meghan McCain or, you know, Chelsea Clinton for that matter. And then Meghan McCain's husband, who also, like, the only reason I know who this guy is, his name is Ben Domenech, and he's Meghan McCain's husband, which is funny. His dad is a Republican official, which is why he's got some type of journalist job. And a couple years ago, he was accused of plagiarism. So he tweeted this out. And I just, like, remind everybody, as you guys pointed out, Seth Meyers, that wasn't the interview. You know, he didn't go hard.
He didn't.
This is the tweet. I see that at Seth Meyers, the untalented piece of shit who only has his job because he regularly gargled Lorne Michaels' balls after my wife tonight with his idiotic anti-Semitic bullshit. Now, he later apologized, blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to throw it to you guys. But, I mean, could you imagine, in addition to everything else to that tweet, you really want to mention a job on television that was earned without merit in the process of defending Meghan McCain?
And isn't Seth Meyers Jewish?
He's half Jewish. He's a half so man. Seth Meyers is my centrist brother. If I was not a dirty communist, I would be Seth Meyers.
Seth Meyers, exactly. it's a big fact. It's, you know, and a lot of times what strikes me, again, we know her politics, right? We know she's Republican. We know the Republican Party is the party of anti-Semitism, right? Which is hilarious because honestly, yes, many Jewish people are very successful and they would be Republican, but for the fact that the party is rampant with anti-Semitism.
Well, it's just like the Jamaican principle, right? We talk about.
Right. How a bunch of West Indian people would be Republican because they love conservatism. They don't mind law and order. They're like, there's a lot of the tenets of Republicanism that they don't mind. But except for the fact the party's base hates them. The party's base hates Black people. The party's base hates Jewish people, right? So Meghan McCain giving speeches on anti-Semitism to Seth Meyers, who's actually Jewish,
right,
is hilarious. And, you know, and she does the classic thing, which is always a good, you know, an automatic easy tell for somebody like me when they refer to Israel and not Jewish people or the Israeli people.
Which is anti-Semitic, by the way.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, Israel, geopolitically, we're aligned with Israel. What does that mean? Who are you aligned with and why? Like, what are you talking about? We know you're aligned with the Israeli regime because that's what your party aligns with. Don't tell me you actually care about anti-Semitism in some real meaningful way, bro. Like, it's you're
just,
Republican.
It's just one of those words, though, Wise. Like, it's one of those things you put out there where it's going to get the attention. So you say it, and that's why I said she knew what she was doing. Like, she did this on purpose. She says certain, you know, trigger things, like, on purpose, bro.
And again, and I want people to understand what Mike is trying to say when he says just grouping all Israeli people, all Jewish people with the actions of the Israeli state, why that's problematic, because those who would, you know, do terrorist attacks in Israel, right? That's what they do. You understand what I'm saying? Like, all of the atrocities perpetuated by the Israeli state And they and the state would say, well, we're doing it on behalf of all Jewish people. That's what they would say, right?
Right.
Like whatever action they undertake is
they
for the safety
not,
and the betterment.
They're not Palestinians and keeping Palestinians from having freedom of movement on behalf of me.
Right, exactly. And so when Meghan McCain just conflates all Jewish people, all Israeli, all people who live in Israel with the decisions made by the likes of Benjamin Netanyahu, it's like, that's anti-Semitic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm aligned with Israel. What does that mean? You know, because the comments that the congresswoman made were in reference to the Israeli state. We're in reference to the lobbyists on Capitol Hill who lobby our politicians on behalf of who? The Israeli state. They're not doing it on behalf of everyday Jewish people, everyday Israeli people, you know, people who are on the front lines of this fucking problem. You know, that's so exactly. Meghan McCain just shows her ignorance even when she tries to freaking, you know, quote unquote, defend Israel's honor. It's ridiculous.
No, but it's ignorance, but it's also, I mean, look, the real question is, first of all, the real question to Meghan McCain is always, why the fuck are you on my television and or why are you sitting here? That's the first question. And then the second question is how do you justify supporting an apartheid state? Period. And then the third question is that if you're committed to getting rid of anti-Semitism and hate and everything of all kinds, why are you through your recklessness and your stupidity potentially endangering a young leader's life, which incidentally you could still, you know, I mean, I feel like we always do this, so I don't even want to do it, but like you could, you know, you could have your disagreements with Ilhan Omar. Ironically, Ilhan Omar's position on Israel-Palestine is actually very moderate, very mainstream. She supports a two-state solution. She just doesn't want to continue to see a state, you know, end a lot of innocent people's lives, which happens regularly. You know, there's no symmetry in that situation in terms of power. So, yeah, Meghan McCain, man, Meghan McCain is disgusting. And I think the only use of Meghan McCain is like literally, I mean, it sounds like a joke, but she is a walking case for socialism. This is why you cannot have power replicate itself like this on every
inheritance
level
and stuff like that.
Kids can't have inheritors, but this idiot can have a top level life for no reason.
Yeah. And even like you said, back to her, you know, to her husband, you know, Mike, you spoke to this, like you know, he said he later apologized. My thing about that is like, fuck the apology that comes after something you really meant. Like you just, it's like you watch those shows where they're in court and the lawyer says something that, you know, they know that the judge is going to be like, oh, the, you know, the jury will take that from the record. You know what I mean? Like, just forget it even happened. Right. It's like, bro, no, we heard it already.
You can't.
You meant that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like we know you meant that shit. You just taking it back because you had to. You know what I'm saying? But it's already out there, bro. Like, in a screenshot ever, like, it happened already. It was up long enough for people to get it. We still have it. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck that apology.
Man, absolutely.
Well said, guys. You know, Meghan McCain is who she is. I actually, every now and again on Twitter, when Joy is just absolutely eviscerating her or eviscerating something that she knows Meghan McCain stands for, I actually stop and enjoy those clips every now and again. But, you know, we're going to move on to something but slightly.
Let me just say, I know I got this on my chest, but the like, if you look even on that panel, right? Joy Behar, this like working class Italian lady, Whoopi Goldberg, and then Sunny. I don't even know Sunny's like, I don't know how she came up in her career. But you literally have three women, two of whom are women of color, one of whom is Italian, who seems like she's a Jew to me. And then up against literally two daughters of multimillionaire Republican politicians. And at least Abby Huntsman ducks back. Like, the fact that Joy Behar has to sit across from Meghan McCain is an insult to Joy Behar. But all right, that's it. That's all I got.
Well, no, I just wanted to move to something actually more divisive than American politics at the moment, and that's Game of Thrones. the crazy thing is, man, Mari, I haven't really gotten a chance to wrap it with you. I already know you're a huge Thrones fan, a Thrones head, Thrones, you know, stan, all of that. But ever since it's come out that the show is going to be veering from the books, right? Because obviously, and I'm gonna preface this because I keep saying this, the man finished his book. It came out, not that it was finished, it was put out, it was published in 2011. The last of A Song of Ice and Fire series.
Right.
We're talking about George R.R. Martin. That was in 2011. The show has ran through the book's material, and pretty much ever since that's been the case, a lot of the diehards, the book devotees, a lot of people have basically started, to where I stand, overly critiquing the show.
Yeah.
Basically like, oh, it's out of the hands of the master, and now these rookies are fucking up the legacy. Where, like, as if every single plot point and storyline of this show was just perfect and had no critiques. And, you know, there was nothing you could overly analyze about. It's like, no, we were engaging with shit that we really liked. I just think people have taken an overly critical eye, in my opinion. That's just my personal opinion. Ever since the showrunners have gone off book and they basically decided on what direction they wanted to take the show. That being said, I would say episode 4 of season 7 was the worst show of the season, right? I was somebody who enjoyed the first one, super duper enjoyed the second one where everybody was saying their goodbyes. Mm-hmm. And the third episode, the war episode against the freaking monstrous death-bringing zombies was incredible. I was blown away. I thought it was an amazing episode of
It lived up to the hype.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
But then I go on the internet and I see there are people bitching about it. And I'm like, two Americas, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
Must be two sides.
You know what I mean? But, you know, episode 4 was, you know, in fairness, it both dragged along and it skipped a trillion steps. It's weird how it was able to do both of those two dichotomies. And I just want to say this and let you guys comment on what your thoughts on the episode were. I just think a couple of things, and I shared these thoughts on Twitter too. I think the people who make the show, Weiss and Benioff, they've been doing the show for 10 years now, damn near. And the show is an 11-month-a-year job. Literally every single day for 11 months out of the year, they are doing this show and nothing else. And so the last two, when they decided that they were going to bring this thing to a close to move on with their life and do something more, they decided that the last two seasons would be abbreviated. Last year was 7 episodes. This season is 6. I think the amount of story that's been covered so far and that will be covered between last season and this season was probably something that should have been done over 30 episodes, and it's being done over 13, right? So basically over 3 normal Throne seasons are being put into 2 abbreviated Throne seasons. And I think that's where you're starting to see some of the cracks in the armor, right? I think that's where some of the plot points feel rushed, or how did such and such get there in just one episode? And all of the critiques that you've seen online, I think that's been the result of this. But what I will say, these people are making this show in real time. George R.R. Martin has had 8 years to finish his book, and he hasn't. And so what these people have been able to accomplish with this show, in my opinion, is nothing short of breathtaking, incredible, and they're going to go down in history as legends for what they did with this show. I'm very happy for what they're doing. This is my favorite show of all time. I will say that, because I just don't think the experience of watching Game of Thrones has ever been replicated, duplicated, will ever be any of those things. Like, I don't think you can make something this entertaining. I love The Sopranos. I love The Wire. I love Breaking Bad. I love Mad Men. Wow.
I was going to ask you that. Like, do you think that experiencing in real time on social media plays a part in your opinion on that, or no?
Nah, honestly, I think my engagement with TV, my engagement with so much TV, I love these other shows for what they are. And, you know, I don't think Game of Thrones, I think Game of Thrones comes damn close to reaching the levels of human complexity on something like Sopranos or Mad Men, right?
For sure.
Or, of course, explaining systems and institutions the way The Wire does. Obviously, it doesn't reach the heights of those shows, but it comes damn close.
Okay, cool. You're not saying that it's as good as...
No. It comes damn close while also being... purely entertainment value wise.
He's about to get very wary of this whole.
No. On entertainment value, it's unmatched. You can't see it. And those other things, those ancillary things, what they do with humanity and institutions and things of that nature, they do a damn good job of it while being the most entertaining.
Did you guys read the books?
No, hell no.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, no, I ain't reading.
Okay, good. Because I felt like, because I'm listening to you guys. You guys are so much more serious about this show than I am. I was like, wait a second. I mean, I knew that Waz didn't read the book, actually, because I feel like we've talked about this before. But
no,
okay,
I didn't.
Mara, you didn't either? All right, okay.
No. I just love the show. Just purely into like the highs that this show is able to deliver, I've never experienced with any other product on TV, right? Like you can say what you want to say about the lows, but when this show is hitting and is humming, there's never been anything like it in my opinion. That being said, episode 4 was terrible.
To Waz's point about the highs is like whether you judge it as a high or a low emotionally. As a high entertainment value, yeah, emotionally it might have been the lowest, but like the Red Wedding, that was the moment. And I ask people this to this day, like I ask Thrones fans to this day, have you ever seen an episode of any television show that made you feel like the Red Wedding? I haven't. Like that was the moment where I had to make a decision. Like, dog, do I even want to continue watching this show? Like, I don't even know. Like, this shit is, you know what I'm saying? But but to Waz's point about episode 4, like it was just. I'll tell you the one thing that I'm going to give Danny a little bit of, I'm going to let her off the hook a little bit here because like, you know, if you watch it after the show goes off, you know, they talk about, you know, stuff in the plot, stuff in the episode, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was talking about how she forgot about the fleet or whatever. And then they, you know, somebody put together a clip where they said, where they reminded her like right before the scene that I think Varys was reminding her or something like that. Now you got to remember, she's the mother of 3 dragons, right?
Right.
I'm a father of 3 kids. I forget shit all the time. Like, if you tell me something right now, if I forget it in like 3 minutes, it's not your fault. It's not like the fault of it. It's mine. Like, it's just what it is. So I'm gonna let her off the hook a little bit with that part. But I do agree with Wise. Like, let's say this season was, you know, as long as like, Your typical Sopranos or Wire season where it's like double digit episodes, right? I don't think anybody would have a problem with the last 2 seasons because a lot more dialogue happens, a lot more gets explained. But when you do it this way, it's just like, I get it, but like, come on, bro. Like don't sacrifice the story for just giving me some thrill, some entertainment, you know, whatever. Right. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that I'm not like, I'm like in and out with this show because, you know, like, I feel like, I mean, we've talked about this, like with Beyonce as an example, right? Like how that there's some things that like everybody loves. So then other people position themselves to hate it just to be contrary. And I definitely do not hate Game of Thrones. I've gotten brought back into Game of Thrones because I legitimately, like, I do want to see what happens. There are a couple of characters that I kind of care about, although, to be honest, not that many, which maybe is one of the reasons that I'm not that deep in the show.
Right.
But I guess the question, like, and I'll just make – part of my bias is that I don't – like, I can watch shows where fucked up, horrible things happen, for sure. I mean, I'm a Sopranos stan. I do think The Sopranos is the best show ever made.
We gonna have to have a serious pod one day, bro. You just said 2 key things while we've been on this shit. Dipset and The Sopranos, bro. We gonna have to talk.
Absolutely.
I rewatch The Sopranos once a year. Like literally,
yes.
I rewatched it. I just finished my 100th rewatch like last week.
That's the show. Woke Bros, Dipset, and Sopranos. Like, only the finest things in life, conversation. Yes. But, like, and I think the part of it is, like, the Sopranos has extraordinarily fucked up shit happen. And as real as Game of Thrones is and as visceral it is, there always is the element of, like, they've got the British accent and Lord, suck my dick off and whatever.
Right.
You know, separate yourself a little bit. But The Sopranos, it's like, no, this is happening right now. Like, you know, so my thing with Game of Thrones, honestly, and again, maybe this is me just being weak. I understand the plot points. I get the writing. But when they burned that little girl, it was like, I felt like giving the show the finger back. Like,
yo, fuck Stannis forever, yo. I don't. Seriously. If there's anybody out there that loves Stannis or likes
Stannis,
him,
Stannis Baratheon. Bro,
I couldn't believe that.
You know what the thing is, though, Mike, too? I think if you're able to watch the show at a remove, I don't know that your viewing experience is enhanced, right? Like, part of. A huge part of the show is like Lost and like some of these other shows that came before, where there's this whole community of people after the show, like digging for Easter eggs and figuring out what's going to happen next and, you know, using the book as context and blah, 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 blah. Like, there's the show and then there's the experience of experiencing the show amongst a bunch of other people afterwards. And that was always great when we all agreed that Game of Thrones was awesome. The minute they stopped using the books, you know, I feel like a lot of book people online, people who, I don't want to demean them, but they seem like fucking dorks to me. the show has become more divisive amongst the people who like the show. You know, so like that's why I gave that whole prologue. It's like, because I love the show so much, I've always been subjecting myself to
Let me actually ask you guys, because I felt like I rambled. What my real question is in The Sopranos, and again, that's to the highest standard, but even The Wire, right? Which I actually don't think holds up quite as well, but is definitely a really good show. Is like when the boy gets killed in the first season of The Wire, it's earned, it makes sense, and it's fucked up. It's sad, but it's like, yeah, that's where they needed to go. That story, like, and while Game of Thrones, of course, it's a brilliant show. It's going where it needs to go. There is an element where it's like, you're just going there to fuck with people. That annoys me. Am I wrong?
But that's the thing. Like, the subversive nature of the show is what drew people in, right? It's like Jaime Lannister. You think he's Prince Charming? No, he fucks his sister and he pushed the baby off of a freaking roof, right? Ned Stark. You think he's the hero of the story? No, his fucking head gets chopped off, episode 9. Right? Like they made their bones subverting people's expectations. So they have too many masters to serve. There are the people who like battles. There are the people who like the dope dialogue. There are the people who like the subversion of the show. They're serving a lot of masters. Mike, I think they earn their bones doing that shit. Sadly,
and then they kind of had to. I think they kind of had to every once in a while give like a little reminder of these times, because like these are the times where this type of shit was acceptable by like the masses, where it's like, oh shit, yeah, you know, you burnt your daughter. Oh yeah, well you had to. It's like, and it's showing this shit because it's like we watching this show and it's like, I know he's a piece of shit, but it's like, we have to really show you, like, no, you think you know you hate Stannis or you don't like Stannis. Let me give you a real reason.
And I think, you know, fundamentally, like, the show is about power, right? Like, it's just about how bloodthirsty, how avarice people can get when it comes to power. I think that's the main thrust of the show, if you will. But I just think in recent years, pretty much ever since season 6, because that's when they first started going, quote unquote, off book. People have just become, some of the fans of the show have just become insufferable to the point where it's like, there have been episodes where I didn't like, I wasn't like blown away by Game of Thrones episodes, but I'll still listen to at least like 2 hours that week of podcasts and read like at least four or five articles about the episode and still do what I do because I feel like.
But then too, wise, like the older I get, the more I realize that I don't have to like every episode to like the series or the show. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't necessarily have to like every single thing.
I accept that about everything that I consume. But what saying is what enhanced my Game of Thrones experience was what I was doing after the show.
Oh, right? Okay. Like, I got you.
Still sort of engaging with the show after I had watched it. I find myself now, I don't even want to engage with it afterwards because people have just become so insufferable about the show. So now I'm just going to enjoy it on my own and like
that's
whoever's doing what they do on Twitter and Reddit, go jerk off somewhere.
That's the reason why I don't even like engage on the timeline like when it's going on, you know what I mean, so much because it's like, like you said, one part of that is people are insufferable. You got people that's like, it's like this elitism where it's like, oh, well, I read the books or, well, I know more than you do. So if I don't like it, then it's not to be liked. If you like it, you wrong type of shit. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I know for a fact that I like a lot of, my favorite character is Cersei. I'm sorry, bro. Like, it's unpopular. Ooh. It's a very unpopular opinion. And But I'm going to tell you why, though. Let me tell you why, right? Most of the times when I watch these shows, I connect with the character that if I don't agree with what you're doing, but the action, like, I respect the action of it. I love it. Like, you know, it might even be like a vanilla take about The Sopranos, but, like, Tony was my favorite on the show. And it's just like, it was easy to pick Tony because he did everything that I want a character to do. He was like the perfect main character. And that's probably why it's my favorite show ever, because I didn't have to go outside.
It's the husband. Shit's disgusting. I guess.
You know, so you know,
so for me, now that's a part of episode 4 that I did like. And that was when Cersei showed everybody what I've been telling them the week leading up to that. I said, the Night King dude, he was cool. He was all right. But they about to see the real now. And everybody kept saying, like, well, the Night King, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, well, he ain't her. And then she showed everybody, he ain't me.
She's a more compelling villain, 100%, 1,000% than the Night King. The reason why I'm happy we touched on it today, because I just wanted the people out there who listen to Woke Bros or listen to Bomb or whatever, if you want to hear positive reinforcement about the show, if you actually like the show still, you'll be able to get that content from me. You know, if you want to hear misery, there's plenty of that going on around the internet. You got anything else, Mike?
You know, I'd just say that, I mean, I feel like maybe this is my contrariness, but I checked out of the show for a while. I was sick of people talking about it. I liked it, but I was never enthralled as everybody else. And so I stopped watching. But now I'm kind of like, you know, it's the Godfather 3 principle. Like, I'm pulled back in. I genuinely want to know how this happens. I think that, you know, it's fun. What's the only other thing that's interesting is I think they're going to need to calibrate the Dany character because she's become like, you've got like Elizabeth Warren writing like blog posts about her or whatever, which is ridiculous. But the truth is like the writing and the setup is that, like this chick is basically a neoconservative and she's like really power mad. And maybe the lesson will be that like the free folk are right. And this whole like throne position is crazy to begin with. Right. And also I understand. I think Cersei, like that's a compelling character, but Sansa to me is such like, I don't know, man. That's just an amazing character to me.
Same. My opinion, she's the person who I'm rooting for the most.
Me too.
As the season. Yeah, Sansa's my favorite. Like her transformation from stupid girl who wanted to marry the disgusting, depraved Joffrey.
And got her pops clipped and got her sister.
Dying to marry this kid to what she's become now, just like a really savvy person, like a smart person.
She's a brilliant strategist.
Ruthless.
Brilliant strategist.
Sansa.
But she's ruthless, but she still has some, like, you know, she's not She's not depraved. I mean, that's...
She's not burning people.
I feel like the universe
I'll tell you
show.
This. I'll tell you this. More importantly, if I didn't check out the show when I saw the Rastafarian Targaryen shit, I'm not going to check out, period. Like, y'all saw that clip, right? Yeah. Like, if that didn't stop me from watching the show, nothing will. Because that was the worst shit ever. So
that was pretty wild. I'm here. I also thought the little excursion to, like, the fake Persian people was not exactly well executed.
Of course. And, you know, again, some of the show's themes... And these are George R.R. Martin's themes where, like, the Dothraki are basically the Mongols and they portray them as savage, uneducated idiots. You know, nobody dwelled on that stuff back when it was George R.R. Martin. But whatever, I digress, guys.
Yeah, like, the leader couldn't even talk. Like, Khal Drogo couldn't even talk. He just communicated in, like, grunts and, like, eyebrow raises and shit.
I do like how George R.R. Martin, to me, and I'm going to get in trouble for this, but he always seemed like... You know, he's a man who understands appetites of all kinds. And anytime a character was too, like, he's just like, oh, you don't want to fuck your sister? You know, you're not an alcoholic? Fuck you. I'm going to head you.
And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, Game of Thrones, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on HBO Sunday. Only 2 episodes left, guys. So check it out. I was really excited to get to this part of the program because it brought me back to my, I want to say, sophomore year in college. One of my very close friends, Nicole Schock, she asked me if I wanted to try mushrooms. And I had just gotten off the phone with my mom. I was done with class for the day. So basically, I had no more obligations for the day. And I said, hey, why the hell not? What ensued, guys, was some of the craziest things that my mind has ever seen. And, you know, that's the first and only time I've actually ever tried mushrooms. But, man, it's something that will never leave me. That experience is something that is seared into my brain, literally. With that being said, Denver, Colorado is putting up decriminalization of magic mushrooms on the ballot for their citizens to vote on. And for those of you who don't understand what decriminalization is, it's not made, quote unquote, legal. It's still illegal to sell it, profit off of it. But if the police find you with, you know, personal usage quantities of mushrooms on you, nothing of consequence will happen to you, right? And if it passes, like, the police will be given a mandate. Like, basically, this is the lowest priority thing that any police officer in Denver should be pursuing. So I think it's just, you know, I think it just speaks to this moment that we're in right now. I know the prison reform movement has kind of lost a little bit of steam, you know, because of Donald Trump and the various other things. But I think that thing is still very real. I think what we're trying to do with destigmatizing people who are addicted to opioids and dealing with the opioid epidemic, I think all of that stuff is of a piece with what's happening in the moment right now. So to see what Denver, Colorado was doing, of course, Colorado being one of the first states to legalize cannabis, and, you know, their tax revenues are going through the roof behind that. I just think it's really cool, man. I think this is just of a piece with what's going on right now, guys.
Mari, have you done mushrooms?
I haven't. And the thing is, so I had some homeboys who did do this. Like, you know, they literally went on a whole trip, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And was just like, they came back and told me, like, bro, listen, I ain't telling you to do it, but hey, like, you know, we went up there and they told me the whole spiel about it, and I was just like, okay, like, this, you know, it sound like my type of It's not like my type of vibe, you know what I mean? It sounds like my type of getaway. So, you know, one day.
And just to speak to what Mari's talking about, people have been experimenting, like I'm talking about scientists, have been experimenting with microdosing for people who suffer from depression, for people who, you know, have other addictions. The active ingredient, I don't know how to pronounce this, but I think it's
psilocybin.
Psilocybin, Mike, man. The active ingredient has been shown to not be an addictive product. It's not something like it's safe, is what I'm trying to say, right? Like, even though people hallucinate, and obviously you probably shouldn't drive a car on mushrooms or operate a crane on mushrooms, but it's been shown to be a relatively safe drug in a country where, you know, folks are allowed to do $9 billion in sales on OxyContin, right?
Well, I mean, that's definitely true. I would say, you know, as somebody who, you know, I haven't done a huge amount, but I've done a little bit of, you know, experience in this realm, including, by the way, like trips that were bad. Like, I did a trip. Honestly,
Michael, I could so see you having a bad trip.
What'd you say?
I could so see you having a bad trip. That is just clear as day for me, bro.
Why me? I'm so chill, though.
No, it's not that you're still neurotic, though. Not that you're not chill.
That's anti-Semitic. Neurotic.
Larry David.
My brain was. Fuck out of here. Wait, you really think I'm neurotic? No, I'm just playing. All right. I love the fucking, you really think I'm neurotic? Actually, neurotic joke fell flat. No, but I had a trip like a couple of weeks before Trump got elected, and it like, that was the precursor. I was like, oh, okay, I see what's happening here. Like, this comes as no surprise. Like, some bad shit is about to arrive, you know? And we already were in some really bad shit. But I just think, like, you know, this is definitely an area where actually, like, people being allowed to do it in like proper context and settings really makes a difference. Like, it's not like weed where that's just ridiculous and we all know all of the racial and economic.
Right. It's not even worth the conversation with weed.
Yeah. Like, whatever. That just needs to be legal. Stop it. Whatever. But this is a place, you know, like, yeah, it's not necessarily like, as someone, like, I've done it in both, like, a kind of, you know, quote unquote party context and in more of a set context. And you really should do it in a set context, including, you know, like, there's actually been governmental grants for psychiatrists and other people to kind of study this stuff for people facing really serious things like life, you know, PTSD, depression, and then I just
anxiety.
I think there's also like a bigger point too about really like the right of people, I mean, to like, to deal with and explore their own experience, right? Like, that is crazy on some level.
Yeah, be human.
Have the control of, you know, someone's ability to potentially evolve themselves. Like, I don't know. I'm just about to go, actually, in a couple weeks on a meditation retreat and shut all of this shit off. And, you know, like, that's on the same continuum. I think, like, it, you know, and there's also big implications for, like, Native Americans. They already have an exemption with peyote. But I don't know, man. I do think that this is a justice and freedom issue. And I think even think about the setting of it, the fact that it's illegal is paranoia creating in and of itself.
Right.
You got to sneak around and use these different avenues to, you know, it's like, oh, shit, I got this much time off of work to do this, or I got this much time away from this to do that. And it's just, like you said, that can create even more anxiety within itself. And I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, come on, bro, you can't expect people to just always every single day just deal with this shit sober. Like, you can't. I mean, you know, if that's their thing, if that's what they're into, if you're not into it, then cool. But come on. Like,
yeah, right. And you know, and for me, this is the first step in a more in one legalization and regulation, meaning like, all right, you can go to the store and you can get a dosage of this without a prescription, or you can get a doctor to be like, you know what, this would be a safe amount for you to do, like get professionals involved, right? This is the first step in getting to that space. And again, I can't stress this enough. This is the country that allowed, you know, people like the Sackler family to make billions of dollars off of opioids. And then, and you know, I like to use this example whenever, because oftentimes, like, I'll be with my girlfriend, say, and she'll introduce me because she, you know, she's, I don't want to say she's apolitical, but she's not.
She's an Armenian.
Yeah. she's not, you know, she's not where, say, me and Mike are politically, right? And so she's amused by the fact that I self-identify as anti-capitalist and communist, right? Like, she finds it amusing. So she likes to tell people, like, at parties, like, oh, my boyfriend's a communist, blah, blah, blah. And people be like, well, why? I'm just like, all right, I'll give you an example of this one family. This one company that sells opioids to people learned that it's super addictive. So they're like, yo, make our doctors push the higher dosages because those are more addictive. Then say, yo, you know how else we could make more money? We'll erect treatment facilities and we'll charge the insurance companies to get people treated. And then we'll make the drug that we serve to people at the treatment facility. Like, that's just capitalism in a nutshell right there, right? Like, in a snapshot. Like, that's why I'm anti-capitalist, right? Yeah. And so in a country that allows people to do shit like that, you know, decriminalizing freaking mushrooms, man, it only makes sense.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm going to try them one day. Fuck it. I told y'all. I mean, well, you know, people know.
Just make sure you have the whole day off.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. It's going to be a, listen, me and my wife already talked about this. Like, it's going to be a whole.
Yeah, y'all drop the kids to somebody.
100%.
Oh, yeah. Don't have the kids.
And go to the park or something. It'll be amazing.
When I had that edible episode, Mike, I don't know if you know about the story, but I'll tell it to you if you don't. So this had to be what, I guess 2 years ago now? 2 years ago now, on Christmas, my homeboy bought, you know, a cookie over. He was like, yo, you can just have it. You know what I'm saying? It's Christmas, fuck it. Like, we chilling. You could just have it. I said, all right, cool. Ate a little piece of it. It was good. Ate another little, you know, small piece because I know what I'm dealing with, right? So I said, okay. Well, I think I know what I'm dealing with at this point. So I said, okay, cool. Ate the piece. I'm chilling. So maybe like, I'll say 30, 45 minutes later, a little bit of it start to hit me. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is manageable. I can tolerate this. I eat another piece. So at this point, there's maybe like, I want to say like a third of the cookie left, right? So I put the cookie up. I said, all right, that's it. Because I know it's, you know, I'm cool. I'm good right now. I'm thinking that's it. I was like, you know what? Man, me finish this shit, dog. This ain't really about what everybody. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, man, this shit ain't what everybody made it out to be. So I finish it. And so maybe an hour after this, so it's been about an hour and a half, right? We pushing like 2 hours now. So my homeboy like, all right, bro, I'll let you tomorrow, whatever, hit me. So all right, cool. And I always describe it like this, Mike. The scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker, he leaves the hospital and he pressed the button and it don't work right away. And then, you know, then it worked and then it just blow up. Like, I feel like that's what he did when he left my apartment, because as soon as he left, because I started feeling sleepy when he was there. I was like, I'm just sleepy. I was like, I'm about to get some good ass sleep tonight. I'm cool. He left. That shit hit me, bro. Like the motherfucking Acme Anvil. Like, you know what I'm saying? Listen, from that point on, I went and took a shower. I got out the shower. I thought I was about to die because I had the chills. Like, but it was cold. You know, it's Christmas. So it's like, you know, it's December. It's cold. I'm like, oh, I'm about to die. Like, this is gonna be some bullshit way to go out right here, but I'm done. So then I found myself going back in the bathroom. I sat on the toilet. I didn't have to do anything. I just sat there for a minute. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna dry off. I'm gonna get myself together. All right, bet. Cool. Go downstairs. You know, my wife, I'm chilling. Oh, later on that night, dog, I end up asking my wife, yo, if the cats had jobs, like, what do you think jobs they would work? Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm dead serious, bro. Like, I'm dead serious.
Come on, Mark.
She answered me. She answered me and gave me, like, a good-ass But this is the part of the story I'm going to tell you, bro. This is the part of the story where I really knew, like, nah, there's something wrong with these shits. Like, so we chilling. And, you know, baby girl, our youngest daughter, is, like, on the – she's on the couch. She's on her tablet, right? So we looking at her, and, like, I tap my wife. I said, yo – I said, am I bugging? I said, look around her. Like, look around Skylar. Like, she got this, like, this aura, like, fucking glow around her. Like, bro, is, like, what is this shit? So she saw it, too. She was like, yeah, this is crazy. And then, like, we stared at the shit for, like, had to be 3 minutes. And I was like, oh, so it's the tablet. It's the light from the tablet. Like, fuck. Like, don't. Like, it's nothing.
Literally, it's funny. Oh boy,
I'm dead serious,
that was
bro.
Not a commercial for magic mushroom and light.
Yeah, it wasn't. Folks,
if you want to take a journey, that's it.
It's been 2 years since I had that shit. I'm still scarred from it, bro. Trust me.
Speaking of journeys,
very serious.
speaking of journeys, I just wanna quickly, briefly, Mari, he's bringing back the MORE series is on the Count the Digs Patreon. Mari just dropped a fresh episode, the fresh one. If you're not a Patreon yet, please become one. patreon.com/countthedings for all extra Count the Digs content. Man, Schoolboy Q just dropped his album last week. I was blessed enough to be able to attend the listening party, which was a couple of weeks ago, where he played like, I want to say, maybe 6 or 7 tracks, of which at the time I didn't remember because I was drunk. It was open bar and I wasn't really paying attention to the music. But this weekend I was able to actually engage with the album. I think it's dope. Right now, I don't think I like it as much as I like Blank Face. I was obsessed with Blank Face when it came out. And I think this album tonally is a little bit different from Blank Face. But I wanted to get your thoughts just to give the people a preview of M.O.R.E., Mari.
Wait, let me just say real quick, because I literally need to run right this second. So I just want to thank you guys so much. Mara, you got to come back on regularly.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you, bro. Yeah, man, it's my honor. Thank you guys so much. I'll see you guys, you know, next week, obviously. And, you know, Michael Brooks Show, patreon.com/TMBS. All right. Talk about Schoolboy Q, and I'll see you guys.
All right, Mike.
All right, YG. The Q album, you know, for anybody who hasn't listened to the last MORE episode titled The Q Episode, that album, to me, how I summed it up was it's Q's way of reminding people that he can make the popular music without sounding like everybody else that's doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he starts the album off with a popular, you know, that type of beat, that type of tempo, you know, it's called, gang shit. You know what I'm saying?
The first single, Mari,
Num Num Juice.
Num Num Juice was, that's basically what that is. He's like, 100%. All right, I know what the contemporary sound is. I could do
100%.
It and do it fantastically. And I love that song, by the way.
Yeah. For sure. And that was the song that got me even more hype, you know, because I had heard he was dropping an album through the grapevine. I was like, oh, Q drop? Okay, cool. You know, I want to hear what he on. And when I heard Num Num Juice, I said, oh, shit. Like, he has this way of mastering that first single, and I referenced Man of the Year. Like, Man of the Year is one of those songs that if you play it right now, it still sounds new. It still sounds like it just came out. And I don't think that feeling will ever fade the way that music is going and it's evolving. That sound is something that you can, any given time, you know what I'm saying? And it'll still be relevant. It'll still hit. But that album was dope, man. I thought that he brought it all together with the song Crash, because, you know, the album's called Crash Talk. You know, usually when people think about crash, you think about the word crash, think about an accident. But with Q, it was, like, ironic because, like, none of this shit is accidental with him. He's telling you, like, you know, I'm going to go until I burn out, basically. Like, if I fail, my daughter fails. So I'm going to go until I just cry. I'm going to go until I completely crash and burn out on this shit. Also, I'm with all of the smoke that y'all niggas want. Like, with his industry people, obstacles, whatever it is in life, I'm ready to crash and hit y'all head on. Like, I'm really about this shit. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what kind of summed the album. That's what I took from it. That was my interpretation of that song. And the music fit. All of the music fit for me.
Yeah. People who are familiar with what we've been doing over the years, Mari, knows that, like, I'm not the biggest Kendrick Lamar fan, right? Like, not that I think whack. Obviously, he's incredible. He's, you know, no, his rap skills are genius level. You know. You know, like, that goes without saying. But, like, I just never really connected with what he was doing. But I just remember the first time I listened to Schoolboy's first album, I was just like, because I didn't listen to the mixtape, right? I wasn't on them. I wasn't on any of these cats when they were on their come up. It was basically Collard Greens was my introduction. Collard Greens was my introduction to Schoolboy, and I just thought that song was fire. I just loved the style of it. I loved it was different, and it didn't sound like anything that was out at the time or that was came before it. Like, he was unique, and Schoolboy's subject matter always had a harder edge. You know, he's kind of an ornery, angry kind of dude, but at the same time, he'll talk fly. I just thought the layers and the complexity of his work, it always resonated with me because I'm more into the ignorant type of rap. You know, Schoolboy's being introspective. At the end of the day, he's a Hoover Crip, right? Like, what is he being introspective about his life on those streets, on those blocks, gangbanging, the type of people that he hung around? Yeah. So he always speaks his truth. And I don't know if you've gotten a chance to check out the interview he put out with Charlamagne.
You know what? I saw you. I don't know if you retweeted it or you said something about it. I'm actually gonna check that out tonight.
Yeah, it's your recommendation. It's incredible because he basically, like, a lot of times he said he put it so eloquently, in my opinion. He said a lot of times people say, because I'm talking about gangster shit, that it's frivolous or it's bullshit content. I'm glorifying this. And he's like, no. I'm giving you my life, right? Like, everything I'm talking about is my actual truth, my actual pain, you know, my actual glory, whatever it may be that I'm talking about, whether it be moving a pack or shooting at somebody. Like, this shit actually happened to me. This shit actually happens in the communities where I'm from.
Yeah, to a certain extent, it's like Jay-Z's come up. You know what I mean? I'm not comparing Schoolboy and Jay-Z, but the stories, you know what I'm saying? It's like, when you heard Hov rap about, you know, when he said, I was selling crack in a building back when selling crack in a building was a big deal. Like, it's when you hear him talk about stuff like that, he was only giving you his life at that point, which makes sense that people don't like certain albums because he was at a certain time in his life. So maybe you don't like that version of him because you fell in love with the version of him that first copped a Bentley or he first copped a Range or whatever. But he's giving you his truth as he goes. And I feel like that's the type of arc that Schoolboy Q is having. And to me, it's evident by when you get a feature like Lil Baby, right? To anybody else, it just looked like, you know, whatever. You got Lil Baby on the song, whatever. But it's not so much of Q having Lil Baby. It's Lil Baby being on the song because Q has found the way to ingratiate himself with the newer culture and the up-and-coming artists because they know that he's official. So they're not going to... They're big on image.
And, you know, Schoolboy, and I'm somebody who's actually a huge fan of Lil Baby. Like, I...
For sure. Yeah, I like him.
I loved his album. I thought it was hard. And, I like him. Somebody who dismissed him as whatever, but, like, I listened to this nigga's music, and I'm like, yo, this guy can rap.
He's good.
Like, I don't care what anybody said. The kid can rap, right?
He's good, man.
And Schoolboy has mentioned in interviews, he's like, if you see a feature on my album, these are people who I'm fans of and have respect for what I do, conversely, right? Whether it be Travis, Dolla Sign, YG, 21, Cudi, obviously Baby. He was like, I only had these people on because I respect what they do as artists. I listen to their shit and, you know, they fuck with what I do. So, you know, it only makes sense that we would come together. Obviously, our very close friend, Jake One, appears twice on the album.
Shout out to Jake.
Yeah, he actually produced the second record, Tales, which is to me is a standout. It's one of my favorites. Like, when people want to talk about conscious, introspective, blah, blah, blah rap, like, he's doing all of that shit in a slick-ass, gangsta-ass, crip-ass way. It's incredible. Another standout for me is the Crash record, produced by Boy Wonder. That song is crazy to me.
Love that song.
Obviously, I told you, Num Num Juice is crazy. I fuck with Chopsticks.
5200 is my favorite song on the album right now.
5200 is crazy. I think my favorite is between Tales and Attention, the outro.
Attention is fire. That was,
The outro where he's like, you know, talking about he saw Jay at the Grammys and Jay knew his name. Right. You know, he met Nas, who's his favorite rapper. Nas was like, nigga, you're nice. you know, Alchemist's favorite producer, his close friend. Like, he's basically bringing you through, you know, what it is that his life is like nowadays, you know, on the other side of being Schoolboy Q.
And if you follow Q on Instagram or, you know, social media, like, he does social media the right way, too. Like, he was a couple weeks ago, or it might have been a month now. I don't know. I lose track of time a lot. But he was out driving. He was riding around. He was, like, in his neighborhood or whatever, and he was just like, you know, he turned the camera on himself, and he was like, dog, like, I got the ingrown hair next to the Q. Like, nah, he's like, man, I'm about to go back home. Like, I got an ingrown next to the Q tattoo. Like, not next to the Q, bro. Like, I'm going back in the crib. And it's one of those things that it might come off as just like, oh, it's just funny. But it's like, no, what he's doing is strategic, because a lot of people go through that, bro. Like, that little small thing about the day where you went outside and you was like, oh, nah, I got a bump on my, oh, nah, I'm finna go back home, bro. Fuck this. Like, fuck this day. Like, so, you know, he does social media the right way, too. He's an all-around artist for this day and age.
I agree.
You know
what I'm saying?
For sure.
I agree. And, you know, just a couple of interesting tidbits is from the Charlamagne interview. This is the fourth version of the album. He had made three other versions, scrapped them.
Okay.
And this is the version that he ended up with. He does a really in-depth explanation as to why he went through all these ebbs and flows. And when you listen to the interview, you know, not to be humble bragging or name dropping or whatever, but like, I happen to already know that, because coming into this, that's why I was really excited to hear it, because I know somebody who works really closely with him, and I had heard that, like, yo, they scrapped the album. You know, Top and Q, you know, agreed that the version that ended up getting made wasn't it, so they went back and did this. And so I was, you know, I'm happy with the result. He mentioned that he might be coming sooner with another album. You know, he said he's in a better pace, like, spiritually, like, he feels better. You know, he's eating better. He's not doing as much. He's not doing lean like he was. He talks about his addiction to lean, and, you know, so I think this is a pretty exciting moment for Schoolboy Q. Obviously, there's a diversity of sounds. I think, to me, that's what sets him apart from most of his contemporaries. Like, he has a very unique style. He's not afraid to experiment with different sounds and different elements of you know, different genres of music.
But he's able to never sound like he's trying.
He does his thing, man.
Yeah, it never sounds like he's trying to be different. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the music sounds organic. It sounds like the music that he actually wants to make and that he actually enjoys, because, like, you know, like I said, to start the conversation, like, he doesn't sound like anybody else. And even amongst, like, my other friends, we talk about Q, and he's one of those guys we place in a different category, because it's like, bro, we can't really compare Q to anybody. He doesn't sound like anybody but himself, which is so hard. And I don't think people really grasp that concept, you know, listening to music these days. When people like a lot of songs, you like the songs. You may not necessarily like the artist. You like the song because that artist understands what moves the needle, and he understands certain things. So he says, okay, I'm going to go get this type of BPM. I'm going to say these type of words, and I'm going to put this type of, you know, effort into it, because people are going to like the song. But do they like you is the question. You know, that's how you stay around and stay relevant. And I think Q just naturally, organically, is just like, he's just a special artist. He's just a very special artist. He's going to be around for as long as he wants.
Yeah, I agree. Everybody, make sure you become a Patreon at patreon.com/countthedings. My man Mari goes in a little bit more, even more in depth on the Schoolboy Q new project, as well as some other topics. Of course, make sure you get your tickets May 18th, Chicago. Okay, next week we touching down in the Midwest for the very first time.
I know I live in Atlanta, and Detroit is my first home, but Chicago really like a second home to me, man. Like, I'm a Midwest kid at heart. I love everything about Chicago, man. I got a lot of homies in Chicago, you know what I mean? Shout out to my man Scott, you know what I mean? Shout out to his brother Joe. Shout out to the homies, man. You know what I'm saying?
Shout out to Joe. Shout out to my man, Pavi, man.
Shout out to everybody over there.
You know, man. My man, Pavi, is an NBA media member now.
Absolutely.
Man.
I heard, hey, Pavi.
I seen him at a few
Pavi the one that got KD started on that streak on the low.
Yeah.
You feel me? Shout out to the homies, man. Shout out to the Chicago homies.
Shout out to those boys, man. But yeah, make sure you guys get your tickets if you're in the greater Midwest region. If you can drive down, trust me, you will not regret it. Jay Adonde already confirmed as a panelist. We got a couple of more surprises to pull out of our sleeves. So make sure May 18th, you're in the building at the Lincoln Hall in Chicago. Of course, thank you to all the people who already subscribed to Patreon, man. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to put together stuff like Woke Bros and Pack Your Knives and, you know, a lot of the different properties, the Bomb Show. We wouldn't be able to do a lot of that stuff without the support of all of our patrons. So I want to give a big shout out to them. Of course, shout out to my brother Mariano. Everybody knows Mariano is one of the GOATs. You know, he's one of the greatest voices that we got. Count the dings thing, man. I always enjoy chopping it up with, particularly about rap, because we're both rap nerds. And
absolutely.
We could go on for hours about a lot of this rap stuff, so I always love tapping in with him.
You already know, man. My brother forever, bro.
And getting into the pulse with him. We will see you guys next week. I'm out.